Here we go. My name's Gareth. I'm an addict. Good to see you all, and thanks for taking the meeting, Roz, and for what you said, Carrie. It was really great. I identified the whole way through. There was one remark in particular. You may remember. I'll not mention it again. But this is the finest laxative I've ever known. Anyway. I got asked to do this a while ago, and I kind of I really didn't want to do it. Really didn't want to do this, and I still really, really don't want to do this. but anyway, here I am, and I thought, that's what this is all about, is coming and doing it. And there's a little acronym that I heard years ago about FEAR, FEAR, and it's you can fuck everything and run, or face everything and recover, And I just thought, you just got to do this stuff. I thought, Jesus, I'm not that special. I'm not that different. There's going to be another 51 people doing this year, So, you just show up and do your best. Try and tell the truth. I say try. I will try. It isn't my forte, I have to say. But I'm really going to try, And that was my great lesson. The first... am I speaking into this right? Is hearing okay? The first share I ever did... I was down in Bournemouth. I had about 6 weeks' notice of doing this share. I was 6 months clean. I rehearsed it every day for those 6 weeks, All the jokes I was going to tell, where they were going to laugh, where they were going to cry, the whole nine yards, and I don't know how many people know Boscombe or Bournemouth, but there's this little place called the Sedman Unit, and there was this meeting in there, and there was, about this many people in that room, and it's about, a tenth of the size, right? And I launched into my speech, I cracked my first joke, and it was just fucking total silence. It was totally horrendous, when the room turns upside down. It was I was getting vertigo, and the tumbleweed are blowing through, and I was just Christ. If someone had handed me a massive syringe, I probably would have done it just to kill me. It was just horrendous, right? And I left, and I knew it was bad because people were kind of empathizing with me at the end of my share. my friends looked really, really traumatized. It was terrible, and I'd nowhere to live at that point. I'd just come out of treatment, and I was staying on this guy's floor, and I just remember going back that night, and the kind of embarrassed silence in the room with him. You could see he's just looking at me going, "You poor bastard," right? I didn't pick up then, and I haven't since. And that was that's 2000, the year 2000, and I've been clean ever since. And my big lesson from that experience was just to show up and tell the truth to the best of my ability, just do my best, and that's all I can do. Hand it over. I have an experience of recovery. I have an experience of using drugs. I'm an addict. I live with addiction. I've got a program in my life. I can talk about this stuff. But I can. As we do, we can go off in the head and go off in the people pleasing or the mad expectations we get. So I'm here, and the job. For me, that's kind of the job done already. I suppose what I should say now is, for anyone new, I know there are some new people in the room. I know there's people, sat here withdrawn in the room tonight, just stick with it, give it a go. It works. You don't have to come up and do what I'm doing tonight. I never thought I would be, I don't know, trouble making eye contact with people, my self-esteem was just absolutely shot to pieces. I remember a time actually, I thought I was using, I thought I was dying, and I was too embarrassed for the girl I was with, for her to call an ambulance, because it would have been too embarrassed if I hadn't died in the ambulance crew, because it just felt so shit about myself. And, things are different today. So I suppose I'm gonna talk a bit, a little bit about where I come from, and as you may gather from the accent, I'm not a Londoner. I grew up in a place called Carrickfergus in Northern Ireland. It's sort of small town in the outskirts of Belfast, and I kind of grew up, and you know, and I'm going to talk about my feelings, but from when I was a little boy, I just didn't like who I was. I just remember like looking in the mirror and just going, yeah, like, you're an ugly bastard, right? You know, like really thinking that stuff, like just going, you're a dick, right? Or like, and looking at my family and thinking, you're ugly and you're all dicks as well, right? Or like, you know, just like that real, and I hated where I lived and I felt, you know, yeah, I felt persecuted and victimized. And, you know, this is stuff that I realized writing my step work, you know, my step four, you know, which is a personal inventory. I realized that I was a victim, or I am a victim, you know, I can act and all that stuff, you know, I thought everyone was out to get me, and I was just like kind of really uncomfortable in myself, and you know, I suppose from that age I tried to find ways to feel better about myself, and some of them healthier than others, let's say. You know, I'd like, you know, I'd get obsessed about things, you know, like the healthy stuff would be like I'd get obsessed about sports, you know, or bicycles or something, or like the other stuff would be like obsessed with fire, like setting fire to things. Like I just, like if you sat still for long enough, I was gonna set fire to you. It was that kind of thing, you know. I like the paraphernalia, like I collected, like you know, matchboxes, matchbooks, like get my hands on oil, petrol, just like anything flammable, you know. I just loved it, like, and I'd make little, I shouldn't say this, but I made little bombs, right, like with the accent and everything. Are you really going to put this on the internet? Like, we're going to be getting a few, but you know, just really little ones, not like, not what the big boys were making, so it, like, and I just remember, like, I'd just stand and I'd strike matches and everything would be okay, everything would be still, you know, I could just, like, do that and just strike matches and it was all cool, right? And, you know, and slot machines, was mad about fruit machines, like absolutely mental about them, was playing fruit machines before, like when I had to stand on the seat to get the money in the slot, you know. And I used to go to, like, my dad was involved with different social clubs in the town, and he was part of this rowing and sailing club, and we used to go, he used to take turns on doing the bar on it, you know, like once a week or once a fortnight or something, and I remember going down there and I'd stand on the seat and play, or just watch other people play, and it was the same thing. When the reels were turning, everything was okay, but like once it stopped and the money stopped, they just freak out, you know. And I remember this time, like the money, and I'm going like, where am I going to get money? And then I remembered that, like, seeing it kind of eye level, all these like 20p coins, and it was on the side of the pool table, you know what I mean? So I just went over like and went, whoa, and got all the 20p's and went back, and it was like, yes, you know, and playing, and I was vaguely aware of this like fight breaking out behind me, right? But like, I really didn't put it together, like, for, you know, and it was like all stuff like that, you know. If I'd see something, I'd be like down, like, you know, just pick things up and put it in my pocket, because what was it, you know, it was all that same, you know, same sort of stuff. And so I had all that, and, you know, and this whole time, like, feeling kind of, you know, excluded and different, and just like, you know, it was like, I don't want to get into all this, but it was like when I grew up, I thought my dad was famous. Like, he knew so many people, you know, he did know a lot of people, and it was actually that same time, and like the Goodies were on the TV, and my dad had a big beard, and all, and I thought he might have been like Bill Oddie or someone, but like, you know what I mean? It was like, it was a weird gig, but it seemed like everyone kind of knew who I was, and just, yeah. So it kind of, like, all this went on, and you know, we could hear people talking about, you know, drugs, and, you know, and John Craven's News Round, and like Grange Hill and all that. And I was like, fuck, that looks good. We want to get into a bit of that, but it's like fucking Carrickfergus, you know what I mean? And so I remember, like, you know, they're saying there's drug dealers at the school gates, but, you know, I couldn't see any of the fuckers for the life of me. But you know, like, you know, I found, like, alcohol. You know, remember, like, my dad, like, you know, had given me, you know, drink before, you know, growing up, you know, to get, you know, so I'd learn how to drink, really, you know, would get a little drop, you know, and I could never really understand it, because I thought it was a terrible taste and all that, and then I got drunk and I understood, you know. I just thought, Jesus, this is absolutely the best possible thing that's ever happened. And it was at the time that I did it, the first time I got drunk, was at this big, there was a big parade, a big sectarian parade beside my house, and there was like, you know, a couple, like, about 20,000-30,000 headbangers with drums and flutes right beside the house. It was like Sodom Gomorrah by sea. It was fantastic, right? And And you know, on a drank a bottle of gin with my friend Jason Crane, and everything just went wonderful, you know, and it had all those kind of elements that I grew to love, you know, like music and violence and whatever else, right? And you know, addictive behavior. And so anyway, I kind of got into all that, and I got into, you know, I just wanted to get drunk as often as possible, and, you know, I loved, like, what it gave me, and, like, you know, that you could kind of be a bit of a legend, you know, you could be a bit of a headbanger, and, like, you know, have stories to tell, and other people, you know, all that bullshit, right? And so I kind of got into that, and, you know, and that kind of went on, and you know, I remember, like, you know, we started, like, smoking a bit of hash or whatever, so there's all that, and, you know, wanting to do more drugs, and, you know, I used to hang around with this guy, Rory, and I remember his mum, you know, his mum was never at home, like, we'd just do whatever we wanted in the house, and on this time, you know, we're at his house, and, like, you know, after school or whatever, and we're hooking through his mum's room, like, and getting out all these face-to-face magazines and all the sex, all the whatever you're doing, and we found this packet of syringes. And it was just like, we found this packet of syringes, and I just remember thinking, like, what can we inject? And, like, but it's Carrickfergus, there's nothing to inject, right? Except next door, Rory made his own homebrew beer. Yeah. So I thought, I'd heard about people injecting scrumpy, and I thought, well, inject homebrew beer. You got to make do with what you've got. Why the hell not, right? So he's holding my arm, and I'm, like, injecting myself with this homebrew beer. Did it about 7 times, right? Nothing happened other than I couldn't move my arm for about 6 weeks. But the thing, you know, that's just where my head was at, and that's how it went on. You know, and I didn't get back in the needles for quite a while, but I did get into them again. But anyway, you know, so all this stuff happened, and you know, taking drugs and going to clubs and blah blah blah, and you know, and I ended up in England to go to art college, and you know, I wanted to sell drugs, and I wanted to be this, and I wanted to be that, and I kind of did it a little bit, and I suppose to get serious, it was like very, I just couldn't stop moving, you know, and very scared to stand still. I didn't realize it at the time, but it was like, you know, wrought with anxiety, you know, like just, you know, really kind of low self-esteem, and I kind of did things that kind of reinforced that, and I just kind of had to keep going, and I ended up in Ibiza, and I met this girl the first night I was in Ibiza. I moved in with her that night, lived with her for a couple of years, you know, as you do, you know, and came back, ended up living down in Brighton, and, you know, and with a very difficult relationship. I did a lot of things I'm not proud of. There was a lot of violence between us, and ultimately she left me, and it just ruined me. And I knew at that time, I knew people who were using heroin, and people in the street. I was kind of like out of flat. I was at money and drugs and all sorts of stuff, and I remember, like, I'd walk by these guys in the streets, and I'd give them stuff, I'd give them shit. I remember even being all, like, making meals and taking people out, you know, plates of soup and stuff like this, and she left, and I got one of them to score for me, and I started using heroin, and, you know, I should say, like, 6 months later, there was the guys that I'd been, like, giving money to or giving ease to, I was selling them heroin. That was that quick, you know. I remember, like, going to these caravans and these, like, you know, mad wee rooms and blocks of flats with just people going, you know, really mental, full-on using, you know, like, real blood over all over the walls kind of stuff. And I loved it, you know. I felt, you know, it's paradoxically very safe there, you know. I kind of felt among my own people. And so I had all this going on, and, you know, and I went back to art college, and I had all this messing around, and, you know... I know times were on here, but there was all this kind of, you know, all this stuff going on, and my head was just getting worse and worse, and actually, after even, like, 6-7 months, I tried to put the drugs down, because, you know, the heroin's down, and, like, I just put it down and went back to my parents, went over and see my dad, and went out for a couple of pints, and walked out of this bar, and I threw up, yeah, and I was sick, like, I was so sick. you know, I don't know what was wrong with me. That's how naive it was, because I'd met people and, you know, all these other people that I was using with, and they'd go talk about clucking and all that. I had no idea what they were talking about. Like, I really didn't. And I kind of was back there, and I was, like, so ill. And I had the absolute heebie-jeebies, like the total heebie-jeebies, right? And then I came back to England after all that, and I picked up again. And that's just what I did for the next 5 years. But but after that, I understood what had happened, and, you know, I got involved with, you know, I got a script, you know, got methadone and, like, you know, all this stuff. But it was just like a constant, like, trying to get clean. But I had no idea about that, about all drugs were the problem. I thought, like, you know, heroin was a problem, and then I'd, like, think it isn't a problem for a while and just keep going with it. And but, you know, very quickly, you know, I got really ill. You know, I started getting blood clots. I started, like, you know, arriving at hospitals. Like, you know, like, just mad stuff was, you know, stuff was happening. And, you know, ultimately, you know, I ended up in Brixton. And I ended up in living in Brixton because I came back up because I got offered a place at a really prestigious art college. And I thought that would sort me out. And I came up, and, you know, my dad helped me get a place in Brixton, and, you know, all this, my girlfriend was up, and the drugs were half the price they were in Brighton, and we got in a really bad way. It got really sad. My girlfriend ended up prostituting herself in Brixton, and she hardly used when I met her, and that was fucking heartbreaking, man, like, that whole thing. You know, I remember, like, her coming to visit me in a detox, right, and, like, some other guy's jacket, you know, just out of a crack house, man, and, like, I just thought, Christ, is this how far it's come, man? You know, it was really, you know, when you just, like, realise how, you know, fuck the situation is. And so anyway, you know, I got clean. Hooray, right? You know what it totally is? It was like, you know, I got to NA, you know, the first NA meeting that I was at was an H&I meeting. And I had no idea what they were talking about. I just thought, what are you on about? It scared me. All it did was listen to all the differences. I just thought, you're mental. Mm-hmm. You're totally mental. But, like, what I got from it was that they didn't use drugs, you know? And so I went to another meeting. And then I went to some more. And then I went to rehab and went even more. And then I just thought it'd be a good idea to use again. So I used again and couldn't stop using, and got to even more hellish places, you know, that had been, because now I had a bit of NA in my head. And then I got another chance, and I got down at Bournemouth, and I've been clean ever since, you know. And so much has happened, like, I got, you know, just so much has happened. You know, physically, you know, arrived down there, one leg was like kind of like a tree trunk, one was like a little, like, it was like a pipe cleaner, you know. It was like, you know, like a thrombosis in this leg. Had my other leg in plaster and not done it, you know what I mean, not gone back to hospital, you know. It was physically, you know, gone. I got my health back, you know. I got the you know, I was prescribed lifetime warfarin, you know. I thought, which is like a rat poison to thin your blood. You know, I don't take that anymore, you know. So I got all that health back, you know. Got my head back, you know. Like, for a long time, I couldn't, like, look in a mirror. I can't say that word right. Mirror. People, you go mirror, they go, what the fuck's he talking about? Mirror. A mirror, right? And a reflective surface. Yeah, I couldn't look in a reflective surface, right? Because I thought, like, I was that self-obsessed, not paranoid. Like, even if I had the curtain shut, I'd think there'd all be people outside looking up and going, look at that vein. Look, who the fuck's he think he is looking in the mirror? Dougly, hey, who's he think he is, the bastard, all this here? But, you know, it was like, kind of that's where it was, you know? And, like, I girls and all, like, kind of, you know, giving you wee invitations and, like, you know, just, I was, like, really beaten down, man, you know. I was, like, really, really beaten down in myself, and a lot of that has changed. Not every day, but, you know, it's changed. And you know, Christ, you know, it's just so much, like, what can I say at the minute? You know, I've 3 years tax paid. I didn't actually pay any tax, but I did the records, you know, and it's completely kind of legit, and you know, I'm self-employed. I've, you know, I had a book published a couple of years ago. of photographs. I didn't write it. I should just say that in case you all think I'm some genius. It was like, it's not, but it's great, and it's something I love doing. And I've done a lot of traveling. I've got some great friends. There's people in this room that I've known for years. You know, I'm godparent. You know, one of my friends, you know, kids, a couple of my friends' kids, but only one of them's here. You know, just like abundant stuff, you know, and life is exciting. You know, it feels really exciting. There's not enough minutes, you know, not enough minutes, hours in the day to get it all done, you know, through, you know, work and recovery and friends and whatever. It's really amazing. But I can make that the problem sometimes. I can, like, turn that dream, because it is the dream. I'm living the dream. Like, have no two ways about it. I'm living the dream. I can turn it into a nightmare, you know. Anna, is that 5 minutes?
No.
Oh, fuck. how long is it? What's... Oh, my God.
You got 2 minutes down, yeah.
All right. So...
10 minutes.
Cool. I can turn all that stuff into a nightmare, you know, quite easily, and do, you know, frequently do. But anyway, what I feel I've got in my life is that I've got a program of recovery. I've got a daily program of recovery. I've got stuff that I can do, that I know how to do, that I know how to live my life, you know. Because, you know, in one of these readings, is that why are we here? It says, you know, through our inability to take personal responsibility, we're actually creating their own problems. That's the story of my life, you know. Just didn't quite know how to do things, and, you know, so I really feel with, you know, with the steps, with the program, you know, gonna live my life. And that's what I'm trying to do. I worked the steps with a sponsor, with a few sponsors. I've worked through, yeah. Anyway, so step one, right? I know that this is how it is for me, right? I can't use drugs and live. That's it. You know what I mean? If I use drugs, it gets, you know, I'm not going to go anywhere good. You know, I can acknowledge that. You know, and I love drugs. You know, I love, there was, you know, a lot of it I loved, you know, and the seedier the better. But, you know, like, I just can't do it, because I just get to a place. I just arrive between the devil and the deep blue sea. I remember that the last time I used, one of the last things I IV'd was temazepam. It was chalk temazepam that I got off the doctor, and I was clucking so badly and my head was so gone. I was eating these things and they weren't doing anything, and I ended up fixing them, right? And I'd just black out, and then I'd come round again and I'd still be clucking, and my head was just shot. And I just remember, like, I was just going, I am so fucked. I'm like between the devil and the deep blue sea here, you know, just, and I don't want ever to go back places like that, you know, because I don't know how to, well, I think I do know how I didn't kill myself, because my best friend killed himself coming off Valium, and it really destroyed me, you know, and he was such a lovely fella and such an addict. We didn't know about any of that at the time. He did it in 98. But, you know, can't use drugs and live. And it's an acknowledgement that, of living with a 12-step program, I can live, and I need to live with a 12-step, you know. So the second step, I suppose, you know, these steps are kind of like a little bit, they always seem a little bit esoteric to me or something, or I can never quite grasp it, but I know it's about God, or it's about hope, and I find it weird talking about God. And I don't know how much I can say about that, but I do have a higher power, and I feel like a sense of spirituality. And I pray, you know, and step two for me, it was a turning point. You know, I just realized it being delivered. I remember this time that I prayed, and I prayed to get out of where I was, and I got out of that, and I was clean. I remember looking at myself this time, and I realized it was clean, and I thought, Jesus, you know, I got out of it, you know. So I don't know how, like, yeah. And the third step, I think, is, this is kind of part of it tonight, is that you show up for life, you know, that, you know, the set's an action step. So I just try and show up for my life and do what needs to be done. Like, when I was a kid, I used to love Elvis. And Elvis and the Memphis Mafia had these little necklaces and rings they used to wear, and it used to say TCB on them, on a bolt of lightning. And it stands for taking care of business. Yeah, and that's what I try and do. I try and take care of business. You know, I just get out of my bed and do what needs to be done, and try and let go. Yeah, and trust and have faith. You know, you know, the fourth step for and I've worked this formally, as I say, but and I'm doing one at the minute. I'm doing 20 minutes a day, but for on a daily basis, 4 and 5 for me is trying to tell, acknowledge the truth to myself, so I can tell it to someone else, and you know, the God of my understanding, you know, that I can just put it out there in the universe, you know, and you know, that's what I try and do. You know, the 6 and 7, I try and live in the assets, you know, my assets and not my defects. You know, I try and practice, you know, tolerance or patience or, you know, honesty is a big one. Like, you know, I am not exaggerating, right? I think I've pretty much told the truth tonight, I think. Yeah, no, I've done pretty well, right? But I tell you, I could not tell the truth. If I told you the truth, it was a fucking accident. It was like, you know, it was like, seriously, it was, you know what I mean? It was like the truth slipped out. You know what I mean? You're like, oh, shit, try and put it back in. You know, I could not tell the truth, right, about anything, right? Because nothing was ever good enough, ever. You know what I mean? If it was like 100, it was 200. If it was, you know, it was just all that, right? And you know, around the defect stuff, you know, stuff I really, that's really come up for me that I didn't even know existed, but, you know, stuff like, you know, the gluttony and, you know, the lust and all this here kind of gear, you know, like I've gone dark places with fruit pastels. I swear to God, right? I've had times, right, of like eating 20 packets of sweets in a row, right? And like I've absolute suicidal depression. It's kind of funny, but like I've scars in my body from self-harming and recovery. My head was so wrecked, you know, just absolutely destroyed. Like not being able to get home at night because I can't stop eating sweets. You know what I mean? Like waking up in the middle of the night choking on a coconut swirl. You know what I mean? Because you're fucking eating sweets while you're asleep. You know what I mean? How mad's all that? I remember thinking that. I thought, this is no way to go after all I've been through. You know what I mean? Like, you know? But like all that real mad addictive stuff, right? You know, so the defects, you know, like a really useful thing I was shown how to do, you know, this sponsor had showed me how to do this thing, and it was just like, you know, just the resentments or, you know, the you know, who it is, you know, what happened, what the defects, where they're based, you know, and just to try and sort stuff out, just to see what was going on. And I, like, you know, people, you know, some people tell you there's 14 defects of character, right? And sometimes when something comes up for me and I hurt so bad, whenever I inventory myself, I realize that I'm kind of in all of them. You know what I mean? And like on clarity, there's a lot to be said for clarity. And you know, when I found that whole step six thing a really painful experience, right? And when I get it, you know what I mean? But it's like you move on, yeah? The eight changed my life. There's no two ways about that. Writing that list completely opened my eyes, you know? And how long's left now? What time is it?
Roughly.
5 minutes, yeah? Yeah. All right. Just like, there's some stuff I want to say, like, but don't want to rattle on any more than I have done already. But with the eight, you know, I wrote this list and of people that had harmed, and it was just like the same stuff happening again and again, and it just like really, you know, it kind of freaked me out, and I left it on this table, and I ended up going off to America for my 3 years clean. To stay with my sponsor's daughter. Yes. Yeah, but the less said about that, the better, right? But he is, you know, it was, not, he's not my sponsor anymore. Funnily enough, but the whole thing was like, you know, I got out there and I went to, you know, went to Los Angeles and I got Have Faith tattooed on my wrist on the day I was 3 years clean, because I realised I had none. I thought I did at the time, but I had none, and I kind of got it to fucking remind myself, just have faith, you know, kind of a little post-it note, permanent post-it note, you know, and it's worked, you know. I recommend it, you know, and I'm not kidding, whatever it takes, man, whatever it takes, sure, and So anyway, I went to LA and I came back and I just thought that was wild. And I was back and I was looking out the window and I was living in this house in Hammersmith. And, you know, I was paying about 50p a week at a car outside. I was working and all this here stuff. And I thought, how do I justify this? So I ended up, you know, leaving the flat. I handed in the book. That's, I've been self-supporting ever since. And I've been incredibly poor and incurred massive debts, blah, blah, blah. I ended up, you know, all sorts of stuff, right? But ultimately, it took me to where I am now. I live in a fantastic house. I've been there about 3 years. I live with people in recovery, beautiful people. They have a daughter who I love to death. You know, it's just, I've had so much out of it, right? And I made a piece of work about the house that I live in. I took photographs there for years, and I got a really big book deal on how to do it, you know, a book of these photographs. You know, that's step eight, right? My defect is I lost the book deal because of a fucking, I was like, don't you know who I think I am? You know what I mean? I fucked it all up, yeah? But that's cool as well, you know? It was just like, it's all just such an, you know, what I'm saying is I just had a radical change in my life, you know, just through a step, my life radically changed, you know, and so that, you know, my step 8 and 9 is like, on a daily basis, you know, like I've made, you know, made direct amends to people, but my ongoing amends are stuff like, you know, that just blew my mind when I got told about this, is like random acts of loving kindness and generosity, you know, putting money in the parking meter for someone, right? You know, like just whatever, use your imagination, you know, shit like that. You know, just being, you know, kind and loving to people, you know, not, you know, repeating the same shit, you know, whatever. So that's kind of my 8 and 9 on a daily. The 10 is writing a daily inventory, incredibly useful thing to do. I've done it from the It Works How and Why pamphlet, brilliant. I've done it without a pamphlet, not so good, because I just get into my self-obsessed nonsense, you know, but there's immense power in the pen and paper and an inventory. Like, if you're not doing, get on it, man. You know what? The 11 prayer and meditation, someone showed me how to meditate down in Bournemouth when it was like a couple of weeks clean. He's called John the Raptist. I'm sure some of you know him, right? Beautiful guy, right? And he showed me how to meditate. I've been doing it ever since. So, you know, I could do about 10 seconds when I started. You know, I can do about 20 seconds now. no, I can meditate. I loved what you said about that, you know, prayer and meditation, man. You know, I don't know what I'm praying to, you know, but it works. Meditation, I'm quite a hyper person, and it kind of it brings me down and gives me a little bit of focus, you know. You know, the 12, I'm doing it now, you know, like being a service, you know, trying to practice, you know, spiritual principles, you know, living my life. And that's it. You know, it isn't fucking rocket science, you know. You know, that's it. That's really about all I've got to say. It's like, if you're new and you think I talked shit, go to another meeting, you know, and listen, you know, listen to someone else. You know, this absolutely does work. You know, there's a lot of people in this room that I see it working for, you know. You know, not using drugs is a huge freedom, but it's brought other stuff, you know. But I believe with this, you know, I can do it, you know. And I'm going to leave it there. Thanks a lot.